Matt Young in his third year, coordinator of football officiating for the Ohio Valley Conference. Hey, Matt, welcome back to the show.
Greg, it's good to be back with you. Big Joe, good to be with you as well. It's always that time of year where we get together and I say to myself, you better start your Christmas shopping because it's going to go, it's going to fly, and before you know it, it's all over.
But, okay, rule change. Let's just continue the conversation we were having just now before we went on the air. We got a lot, you know, obviously, but go ahead, Joe.
Well, the big thing is I know there's a lot of targetness going on, but the crackback rule that for us who played a long time ago, you know, you'd go down the line of scrimmage, a wide receiver would blow you up, and I get my sternum cracked in a game, and to this day. Plays
that's
like,
why the rule changed.
Exactly, yeah, 30 years later on. Those are so tough to call in the field. I think what you guys do as a job is so tough.
Yeah,
it's
becoming more and more difficult. The reality is that ever since we went to spread offenses, which really opened up the playing field and not running on first and second downs anymore, the speed of the student athletes, the quality of their play, the passing game, all that kind of stuff makes the game more violent because people can get head starts and really blow somebody up, quote unquote.
Right.
And so this year the rules committee passed what's called an illegal blindside block rule. And it's important to put the word illegal in it because not all blindside blocks are illegal. They become illegal when certain criteria are met this year. And this is the same rule that the National Football League has had now for a year or so, high school football has had for a year or so. And what that says is that a player who receives a blindside block, and by definition that means he didn't see it coming, or he turned in just a second to where he didn't have reasonable time to defend himself. A player who receives a blindside block, if the player who commits that blindside block does so by attacking him with forcible contact, so he blew him up, a big-time hit from the side, he couldn't see it coming, that is an illegal blindside block, and that's a personal foul and a 15-yard penalty. So that's a change. Now, a player who received a blindside block last year, it only became a foul if it was in the head-neck area and it
right.
was targeting. So
correct.
Now, How can they avoid that foul? Well, they can. These coaches are smart. They can push their opponent with extended arms. That's not an attack. They could run in front of them. They could do what some of these coaches call a spray paint block, where they sort of go around them and stop it from coming.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of new terminology. You know, the reality is in college football now, I think it's fair to say that if you quote unquote blow somebody up on the field, you probably fouled for something.
Right. You know, and the first thing I asked you was, I was always told, if you get your head on the right side, it's not, but that doesn't matter.
It doesn't really matter. The thing I like to say to student athletes and coaches about your head is that if you can see what you hit, you'll never have a targeting foul. If you can see,
you're right.
If you use the technique that you're being taught, which is keep your head up,
right?
See what you're going to hit, get your arms out, block and tackle like you're supposed to, we'll never have a risk of targeting foul. When they lower their head, when they launch, when they make contact at the numbers and higher, you're running the risk.
Yeah, that's just – and I think today the game of football has never been as safe as it is today.
It's much safer, I think.
With all the rules and the padding and everything, and I think some of these – are good. I mean, I still think you're going to have those plays, and I think it's up to the coaches to tell kids, look, you're going to get kicked out of the game if you do this. It should be a priority.
Right. So on that crackback block, so you can imagine a wide receiver, and he comes back to the middle of the line.
Uh-huh.
And if the guy who can't see that coming gets hit forcibly as an attack, then that's a foul.
Right.
Regardless of where he hits him.
Wow.
So that's different. And I think that our coaches will adjust to that. Where do we see this the most? We see this on special team plays. We see this when the field is reversed on a fumble return or an interception return. We see it out in the side zone. And football officials just have to – we call it look for the guy who's running with the brick. You see them start to size someone up, and they turn back, and now they're seeing him coming, and then they start that dash towards them. Sometimes behind the runner. Why in the world would you ever hit someone behind the runner anymore? I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so officials have to expand their vision to see those things. So we always say in a crew of seven, we cannot have more than one person watching the ball carrier because it's not good use of our resources to
right.
have more than one doing that because there's
wow.
21 other players on the field. So
Matt Young with us, coordinator of football officiating with the Ohio Valley Conference. So that was inside the targeting now. Explain the changes there, the targeting, the instant replay review.
So all of college football has a rule change this year for games involving instant replay, which this is our third season of having all games in the Ohio Valley Conference covered with instant replay. So fans are aware that when instant replay is involved in something, there's three logical outcomes. We can confirm the ruling, we can reverse the ruling, or we can let it stand. The Rules Committee took away the option of stands for targeting. We either confirm it, and if we can't confirm it with indisputable video evidence that there was targeting, then the targeting aspect is reversed, the player stays in the game, the 15-yard penalty for targeting goes away. If it's a compound penalty, in other words, roughing the passer with targeting, if we reverse the targeting part, the roughing the passer would still stay. Mm-hmm. But a standalone targeting can be subject to just go away. So what we're asking instant replay to do is basically re-officiate the play. Something is called, now let's start from the beginning and re-officiate the play and make sure we got this right. So I think that the attitude of the Rules Committee and the NCAA is that we really want to refrain from disqualifying players in the margins when we just can't say for sure,
right?
Because video evidence didn't confirm it. Now, at the FCS level, will that be more challenging than the FBS level? Absolutely. We don't have 22 camera angles. And even on their level, when they do have 22 camera angles, it's not a guarantee that you're going to have indisputable video evidence.
Yeah.
So for us, it'll be challenging to see how our member schools adjust to that with the quality of their production.
Would you this is such a tough question in a way. If a ref thinks it's targeting, throw the flag? Is that what they're taught?
If you think, you'll get fired.
We tell Joe not to think. That's why he's got his job.
Right. In other words, you can't guess in this business.
Right.
Now, but that being said, if the elements appear to be targeting, there's a launch, there's a hit to the head neck area, it's a defenseless player, then it used to be we were all trained and we all survived a long time in all of our leagues by making sure we MIBT, make it be there, no matter what, make it big and obvious. When you have some doubt, then you should err on the side that it was.
Right.
Right, because of a player safety connotation to that kind of play. And then, but we do not want to get in the habit of saying, okay, well, let's call something or don't call something, and let's just let replay figure it out. That's being a chicken.
That's exactly right.
We don't want to do that.
And I think people don't realize the play you're talking about right there happens in half a second. I mean,
Absolutely. It's
just boom.
And then I get to sit at home with a remote going one click at a time, one frame at a time, and say, how can you miss that? How can you get that right, you know, and forget that I was on the field for a long time.
Oh, man. So.
Matt Young with us, OVC Football Media Day out here at the Embassy Suites at the airport. He is the coordinator of football officiating. Now, also the progressive penalty as well.
A player who gets a third targeting. So right now, if you get a targeting foul, you're out in the first half, you're out the rest of the game. If you get a targeting foul in the second half that's confirmed, you're out the rest of the game plus the first half of the next game. Now, when you get your third targeting foul, you're out for not only the rest of that game of the targeting foul, but an entire game. Then your next entire game, you're out as well. Now, the original proposal, you heard it here first in Nashville, the original proposal was two targeting fouls, and it became three. So I can honestly say, and let's hope it doesn't happen, we had nobody in the OVC last year that had two targeting fouls. So let's hope that trend continues. I think our coaches are doing a good job of coaching them up. And in fact, I'm not sure we had anybody in Division I with three last year. I know we did in Division II and Division III.
And always the kickoff, the illegal wedge formation. A lot of people don't see that because they're watching the ball and the returner, but there's 10 other guys who are blocking down the field.
Sure, we've always had an illegal wedge formation rule for the last few years, and that said that when three or more players come together shoulder to shoulder within 2 yards apart from each other for the purposes of blocking for a ball carrier, that's an illegal wedge formation. The rule change this year moves the number from three players to two. So now if two players come together shoulder to shoulder intentionally to form a wedge on a kickoff once the ball's been kicked, then they've formed an illegal wedge formation and fouled, regardless of whether or not there's contact
right.
or anywhere on the field. The idea is two guys come together, someone on the kickers shouldn't get about a 20-yard full head of steam and just come in and knock hell out of them, right?
Right.
So, and vice versa, yeah. deep in the kickoff return formation, if two players come together, they shouldn't be able to form a flying wedge and go do something with that. So what's going to happen with that? I think what will happen is our coaches will just take it out of the playbook, and
yeah.
we shouldn't see this very much unless one of the players just is absent-minded and forgets a blocking assignment and then goes and
you know,
it.
It's crazy. I remember locking arms with three other guys. There were
yeah,
four of us.
That.
And we'd be like, the train just go
right.
down like an earthquake.
Like something one, off the, one of those old movies. Right? Yeah.
So. Do you think, maybe 5 years, because I think kickoffs will be gone.
It's under consideration.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think if we make it safer and the numbers play out, our rule is not as restrictive as the NFL rule, where players have to be in certain areas of the field and can't leave until the ball's passed them or different things like that. There is one FCS conference that does not have kickoffs as an experiment, and they have for the last couple of years, and that's the Ivy League. They do not have kickoffs, which I always think is humorous, because if a team scores to come in with 1 point, now they need to onside kick. They have to say, okay, we want an onside kick, and then they actually do have a kickoff at that point
oh.
in time. So there's no surprise onside kick because they
wow.
don't have any. So I don't
but
know.
But those, they're so smart.
They're so smart, right? They've outthought it.
Matt Young, he is the OVC, coordinator of football officiating, the overtime scoring. Now, that's changed. No change in the first four overtime periods.
Correct.
We know about what – after three, though, you got what – start going for two,
so
that stays.
The fifth one, though,
the penalty starts at the three-yard line, and you have to go for two. And, of course, this was a little bit of the fallout. Was it the Texas A&M Mississippi State game? That
right,
went
where they had like
LSU, Texas A&M. They had seven.
They had one game in the OVC last year that was covered by the Big South Conference that one of our schools had five overtimes, Jacksonville at Kennesaw State. I was driving home, I think, from Tech that night, and I think I made it all the way back to Northern Kentucky, and still that game was still being played. But once we get to the fifth overtime, then we put the ball on the 3 yard line, and you just go for two until there's a winner. And so, hopefully, we don't ever get to five overtimes.
Yeah, I think that's we're talking one or two instances in the hundreds of football games
right.
that were played last year that go on with that. Your job on a Saturday is what?
My job on a Saturday is to hold my breath, make sure nothing awful happens.
Yeah.
No, I'm out and about at our schools on Saturdays. I have to monitor games as well. I have to pay attention to what Instant Replay is doing. On Saturday, I'm out and about interacting with our crews and our people and making sure things are going well. The conference puts a value on having someone to travel in this league to do that. What happens during the week, though, is I've got every play of every game to grade, and we do that, and the officials get their feedback. Coaches may or may not send in plays from their games that they would like reviewed. There might be something that was controversial that we may or may not need to make a statement on. There's training films to make for the officiating staff. There's conference calls to have with crew chiefs. And then there's rules quizzes or sayings getting ready for the upcoming week. It's a big
yes.
deal. And, we just had our summertime clinic of football officials came to Nashville Thursday night, and we worked through Sunday afternoon. And this weekend, 75 guys full-time and part-time that work for us. And of course, every single person in that room wants to do the very best they can to get the plays called correctly and to do a superior job. Everybody wants that. And I can tell you that the men and women who officiate college football, not only in the OVC but beyond, take this so very seriously and so professionally and really want the very best to happen. And they work hard at it to make that happen. And there's just a lot of behind-the-scenes things that people just have no idea. And if you're great, you go to the postseason. And if you're not great long enough, then you don't get a contract next year. We have the OVC put five officials into FBS conferences going into this season. And through attrition and some other things, there will be five others who are making their full-time start with this year. So you're going to see a young athletic staff this year in the OVC.
And I've heard that there's a shortage of high school officiating, even on down to the lower levels. But and so is that something that's coming to
it's
you?
It's concerning.
It's a concerning. Just the number of quality officials that you can pull from.
That's correct. I mean, you have so many factors that go into that. First of all, this is hard, and it doesn't happen instantly. It takes years to get good, and sometimes that's not congruent with a millennial culture that says instant everything.
Yeah.
You know, I have high school officials that I've supervised before who they work 1 or 2 years and they just don't understand why I haven't sent them to Lexington for the state finals in Kentucky. Well, it's because you've only done this 3 years and you're 22
right.
years old.
Yeah.
You know? that's one thing. But so that is that seeping into the college ranks? Not so much in FCS and FBS, but Division II and Division III and NAIA are starting to see that as well. And why, you know, high school officiating is starting to suffer as well. I mean, you might make a little bit of money in this kind of stuff, but is it worth the headache and is it worth the way that you are treated? If you go to YouTube and look at what's celebrated by people as it relates to the verbal abuse and assault of officials, there's just way too many young people in our country today to say that's not worth that.
Yeah.
Why would I want to do that?
Right.
And I don't
right.
blame them. I don't want. I didn't like that either.
No.
One more question.
Sure.
You're talking about all the things you do. How quick on a Sunday and Monday do the complaints start coming in from the coaches? In the film and all that starts tricking because inevitably you're going to get those on a Sunday and a Monday.
So we have access to our film immediately after games.
Right.
So our crews go home with their film before they leave venues. And that's courtesy of our instant replay equipment. You know, knock on wood, our coaches are pretty professional. There might be some real heartburn over something that might need some immediate attention, but that's really rare. They'll begin to send in some plays. Was this holding? Was this not? Did we miss this or something like that? Sunday night into Monday, usually something like that. But chances are I already know. And the reason I say that is all the crew chiefs must call you after the game. And I have the same relationship with the commissioner. I'm not going to let her get blindsided by something that's happened. And similarly, that's what I expect out of my white hats, my referees, is that if you think that I'm going to hear about something, I need to hear that from you first. So I can have an answer for coach whoever that calls that, yeah, I've already looked at that and I think you're right.
Yeah.
And then you say, and they'll say,
what?
What? And then guess what? The argument's over. So,
well, Matt, hey, thanks for stopping by.
It's so good to be with you.
It's always fun. This has sort of become an annual thing where you get us caught up on what's coming. Appreciate you, man.
I'm looking forward to seeing you all on the road.